portion of the Lars Morning Show in the afternoon is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window in the United States. Get more information by going to the website, windowworldstlouis.com. I see what you did there with the music. Bridge of Sighs by Robin Trower.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to talk about Bridge of Spies,
ooh,
movie today.
Hey, there you go.
Nicely done. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here with me, and now news director Colin Jeffrey sheds that garb and switches into his alter ego outfit as Showbiz Boy for our regular weekly segment. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. I'm going to get to Bridge of Spies here, the new Tom Hanks movie, in just a moment. What do you have for today?
I've got a couple movies, actually. I've got Crimson Peak and Beasts of No Nation.
Okay, before we get to those, a few weeks ago, you reviewed the Johnny Depp movie Black Mass.
Yes.
On this show. As I recall, you were not a big fan of the movie?
Not a huge fan of it, no. Did you see it finally?
I went yesterday to a daytime show. Let me tell you, Thursdays at noon.
Prime time to go.
That's time to go. It was me and two other guys. And they
And
they didn't come in, like me, individuals. They were not together. But they didn't come in until about 2 minutes before the movie started. I was about to turn around and go, go ahead, Scotty, roll it whenever you're ready. Because I have been in daytime screenings where I was the only one in there. And I wonder, how can movie theaters stay alive?
I don't know, because I've been to a 10:30 at night showing on a Tuesday of a movie, and it was me and one other person, and he fell asleep 15 minutes into it because I could hear him snoring.
Really?
And so he essentially paid $12 to go and sleep in a movie theater.
See, now I can understand why you would have multiple matinees on the weekend.
Yeah, but not.
But, I mean, why do you need to have a noon Thursday show? I mean, I was glad they did so that I could go see it yesterday and not have to deal with anybody. It was only $5. So that's all good. I don't want them to stop. But I wonder, as a business model, for them to just have to pay to turn the lights on and all the snack bar stuff. You know, they made a lot more popcorn than all three of us could have possibly consumed. And I didn't see anybody else going into any of the other theaters that it is multiplex.
Yeah, I don't
know. So, you know, they got to pay the kids who work there. And
what did you think of the movie?
Didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No.
Really?
I was disappointed. It's long. It's boring.
It's very long.
And worst of all, it's slow.
It's very long.
And I like gangster movies. I like good gangster and mob movies. And I followed the Whitey Bulger story when it came out in the news a few years ago. I was fascinated by this guy who was not only a killer and a mob boss, but also an FBI informant. I thought, wow, that's a great story. Having seen the movie, I got to tell you, I was wrong. It's not that great a story, or at least it wasn't that well told. Did you like it when you saw it, Dan?
I liked it better than you guys did. But I'm not really, I like Casino. I loved Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know all that much about Whitey Bulger. But then I went in and I found out a lot about Whitey Bulger, figured out it was all true and all this other stuff. And,
yeah.
And so I enjoyed it because I was being told the story about
Whitey Bulger. I also saw Johnny Depp in Donnie Brasco with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Much better mob movie than this because you're actually finding out about the low-life guys who are at the bottom levels of the mob. And, you know, in that one, Johnny Depp plays an FBI agent, Joe Falcone, who has to go in and infiltrate the mob under the guise of being an undercover guy whose name is Donnie Brasco. And he infiltrates the mob and he actually gets to find out what their stories are, and you get much more interesting stories out of it. There was no part of this movie where I went, oh, well, that's interesting.
I do agree with you. It was too long, and there were some very slow parts in it.
Yeah. Disappointing.
But I enjoyed it.
Disappointing. All right, let's get to this week's movie. Why don't you start with Crimson Peak, you said?
We'll start with Crimson Peak. This is the latest effort from Guillermo del Toro, and if you saw Pan's Labyrinth from, oh, wow, close to a decade ago now. Wow. I can't believe it's been that long. That was a creepy animated. It was just good. It was good. If you haven't seen it, it's creepy. It's very much the vibe of this. He was inspired by horror ideas early on in his career. He then left and did some other things. About a few years ago, he wrote a series of books, the Strain Trilogy, which if you're watching on FX, are a series of really gory vampire stories. So that's what he's inspired by. He left to do other things. He's now back doing a horror film.
Okay.
This is a period piece. Starts off in America. 1800s, mm-hmm. and we meet our main character. It's a young girl who we find can see ghosts, and her mother dies and is given a warning by this ghost, and she voices over that you don't understand warnings sometimes when you're first given them. It doesn't make sense. She grows up, experiences another personal family tragedy, and runs off with a baronet, which they make a big joke of in the film, played by Tom Hiddleston, who you may know as Loki from the Avenger movies. He whisks her away to his home in Europe, and it's this creepy, creepy house. Just this creepy house that is on the, it's above a mine where they pull red clay out of the ground, mm-hmm. and the red clay seeps through the ground. And it's just really creepy. It's an added creepy factor that works really well in this.
Okay. I'm already lost.
It's a ghost story. I don't want to give too much away. It spends about 40 minutes setting the table of explaining who she is, growing up, why Tom Hiddleston ever comes over. He's seeking funding from her father to build an piece of excavating equipment to take this red clay out of the ground.
Is the red clay evil in some way?
No, not at all.
Okay. Is she evil in some way?
No.
Is he evil in some way?
No.
Where's the evil?
This is not at all hokey in those ways.
So what's scary about it?
This is just a really good ghost story.
The excavating equipment.
No, that is...
Oh, that's not evil.
I swear that bulldozer moved!
Yeah. That's not even creepy. The house is creepy, and one of the people who's in the house is creepy. Tom Hiddleston's sister, played by Jessica Chastain, is very, very creepy.
Okay.
And she's probably the horror heavy, I guess.
Is it my imagination, or are we now in the era where every movie has to have Jessica Chastain in it?
It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
No, but yeah, she's in a lot of movies. She's very good in this. Very good. Very creepy. And if I keep saying that word, it's because it is. The entire movie is unsettling in that way.
Why didn't they call it Creepy Peak instead of Crimson Peak?
They tell you why they call it Crimson Peak. As you should in all scary movies, mm-hmm. you tell them why it's called the scary movie.
I'm guessing it's more than the red clay?
It's mostly the red clay.
Okay.
It's mostly the red clay.
All right.
But this is a movie that it takes time to set the stage. There are a few scares that will get you hooked early on, and you'll realize, oh, this is going to be a scary movie. And then it just does a good job of setting the stage and explaining the story and allowing the people to take center stage and their personalities to play off of one another. Outside of that, it is gorgeous. Like, this is one of the most beautiful sets. It's beautifully shot. The costumes are great, which you ordinarily don't say, but it feels like you're in that time. It doesn't mm-hmm. feel hokey at all. It doesn't feel like a set. It feels very much like there's this house. They built this enormous house for this movie, and who knows what they do after it. Again, I don't want to give away the twists and turns or anything. Just be aware, this is not a Paranormal Activity. Oh my gosh, what's that in the corner?
Are there any scenes where you're sitting in your seat in the movie theater and everything's going along normally, and then all of a sudden you're going, ah!
Once or twice. There are some really good...
Okay.
There's some really good scares like that where you can tell. They do a good job with the music, again, building suspense. And part of suspense is there's a payoff sometimes and not other times. If every time someone was brushing their teeth in a movie, bent down to spit in the sink, and came back up and there was someone in the mirror, it wouldn't be scary.
Right.
You have to have the mirror empty sometimes.
Yeah.
This does a good job of having those moments mixed in with the moments where something happens.
Okay, so on a scale of 10?
This is a 7.5.
Crimson Peak, it's a 7.5.
Yes, and this is a great Halloween movie because it's not gory to the point of ridiculousness.
Are there going to be other scary movies coming out in the next 2 weeks with the Halloween?
Yeah, there's a couple
approaching.
I still think we've got Paranormal Activity, the newest one of those, or that just came out. The final Paranormal Activity. I think all six of those movies cost like, you know, a hamburger and $7 to make, and they've made like $1 billion.
The final Paranormal Activity until the reboot and the origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
As they always do.
But yeah, Crimson Peak. Go see it.
Okay. Bridge of Spies is a movie by this new young director who I think really is going to do some things. Steven Spielberg is his name.
Spielberg?
Not familiar.
It may be pronounced differently. I'm not sure. I mean, when you get a Spielberg movie, you know one thing you're not going to have to worry about is the pacing and the direction.
No.
He's going to get it right, and it's going to look exactly the way it's supposed to look. The movie is about a guy by the name of James Donovan, who was a real-life insurance lawyer in 1957. He had served as one of the investigators for the Nuremberg trials after World War II, but then had gone back to his normal everyday life as an insurance investigator in New York. The movie starts off with the arrest of a Soviet spy by the name of Rudolf Abel. Also, true story from 1957. He is arrested and is charged with espionage. Now, in 1957, we were, if not at the height of, pretty close to the height of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. Kids were seeing duck and cover movies in their classrooms to tell them, you know, if the bomb does go off, which everybody was sure the Soviets were going to drop on us, if the bomb goes off, duck and cover under your desk because your desk is lined with lead. I don't know what the duck and cover thing was supposed to be. Yeah. Don't look at the flash. I mean, it was a scary time in America, and our government and our media did a very good job of continuing that paranoia, even more so than today. But I'm off on a tangent already. So Rudolf Abel, the Soviet spy, gets arrested in Brooklyn, and he has to go on trial. And the judge wants to appoint somebody to do this, and it ends up being the character played by Tom Hanks, James Donovan. His boss is Alan Alda, who says, you know, we've been asked by this firm to do it, and here at the firm, we think you're the best guy to do it. And he says, look, I'm an insurance lawyer. Yeah, but you have integrity because you were part of the Nuremberg trials. We know that you can do this and give him the defense that he deserves, but no more. And by that, he means go in there and represent the guy, but just make sure that the process works correctly. We don't expect you to get him off. You know, we don't expect you to have a Soviet spy being released and acquitted and found not guilty. Just make sure that everything goes okay. Well, not only does he do the job, but he also ends up saving Rudolf Abel's life. And the reason he's able to save the life is because he appeals to the judge by telling the judge, Your Honor, yes, well, you could kill this guy. Give him the capital punishment for being a Soviet spy, and that would be it. But then what happens when one of our guys gets caught by the Russians? They're going to do the same to our guy. We're not going to want that. Wouldn't it be better if we held on to Rudolf Abel, gave him a life sentence, but held him as a bargaining chip in the event that that ever happens?
And that is called foreshadowing.
Yes, because 3 years later, a U.S. Air Force pilot by the name of Francis Gary Powers was in a plane, a U-2 plane, flying at 50,000, 60,000 feet over the Soviet Union, taking pictures, and was shot down by anti-aircraft missiles and taken prisoner. And now it turns from the prosecution of a Soviet spy to, can this lawyer, James Donovan, go to Europe and work out an exchange? Can we trade our captured spy for their captured spy, because they believe that Francis Gary Powers is a spy? And technically, if you're flying over somebody else's country and taking pictures from their plane, I think that's the definition of a spy.
Without permission.
Without permission, yes.
Otherwise, you're Google.
You know, the United States government didn't consider Francis Gary Powers a spy, but the Soviets certainly did. But the Soviets and the Americans can't meet face-to-face, and no representative of the countries can meet face-to-face. So James Donovan is tasked with unofficially going to Berlin and trying to negotiate through the Germans to make this deal happen. It happens to coincide with the time when the Berlin Wall is being built. And one thing that Spielberg does brilliantly in this movie is capture the moments of the Berlin Wall being built, whereas one day there was a street here that was just a normal street, and the next day there are East German soldiers in the middle of that street putting up cinder blocks with grout and putting them up all together and building a wall in the middle of the street. And the Germans, remember, this is not in the internet age. They don't know what's going on. They have no idea why are they building this wall in the middle of the street. But within just a couple of days, they now live in a divided city. They knew that this was West Germany and East Germany, but there wasn't really a boundary. Now there's a serious boundary there, and we see that in the movie, and it's very, very well done by Spielberg. And now when Tom Hanks goes there, he now has to go through a checkpoint to get to the other side to be able to negotiate with them. Well, Tom Hanks is exactly the right kind of guy you want in this situation, because he plays James Donovan with just the right amount of integrity, and it's a question of whether he can get through the bureaucracy of the Soviet-run Eastern Bloc that East Germany and East Berlin represent there and actually get this trade done. Now, this is a matter of historical record, but I'm still not going to spoil the movie for you by telling you how it happens and what happens towards the end, other than to say that this is a story that I think a lot of Americans don't know. This happened when most of us were either young or not alive at all. And it's not a story that was told to us in school all that much. So it's a great little history lesson, but it's also a very, very good movie. It's called Bridge of Spies. I give it an 8 out of 10. Tom Hanks, probably going to be nominated for yet another Academy Award for this role.
Wow.
And I think Spielberg did a very good job directing it. It's very, very good movie, Bridge of Spies.
Wow. And the last movie of the week. This is one that you have the unique ability to watch at home right now, if you want, for free, if you have Netflix. Beasts of No Nation. I'm going to give you the director's name. If you're a fan of HBO's True Detective, you'll know him immediately from season one, Cary Fukunaga.
I beg your pardon?
Who?
Exactly.
I don't think you can say that on the radio. Hold on. Dan, can you say Cary on the radio?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No.
He directed the first season of True Detective.
Have him check on it.
Yeah.
Sorry, he directed the first
season of True Detective,
yeah,
which was excellent, I thought, and then walked away from directing the second season, mm-hmm, which was
not as good.
Not excellent.
Right.
It's gentle. He started in 2005 trying to make this movie, Beasts of No Nation, after he read the novel of the same title and couldn't find anywhere for it to go. So he shopped it around. Netflix paid $12 million for this movie. This is Netflix's first feature-length movie, and it's in theaters as well. Very limited screenings because theater owners are petulant and don't want to show a good movie, and they want to say, Netflix, you're being mean.
Well, I think it has to do much more with the commercial question of theaters and home viewing, and they see Netflix as the enemy.
Yes, but again, my issue is I think they're looking at this short-sighted. No one is going to go see Avengers 3 on Netflix. It will do fine at box office. There's a place for both of these to coexist.
Okay.
And movie directors shoot things, especially movies, to be seen on a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie I saw on my computer, and it is very good. It is gorgeous and would be even better on a full screen.
Okay,
the premise
of
this movie.
So then why do you have to go to a movie theater to see it if it's also simultaneously streaming on Netflix?
It gives you the option to go see it if you want to. I don't have to go see any movie in the theater. I could wait for it to come out on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to see something, it's a great place to go see it.
And there are still plenty of people who don't have Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are many, many people.
Okay.
The premise of this movie, there's a fictitious African country in which there is a civil war and military's on one side. There is a separate side of the rebels who the military says they're fighting. And out of that springs a third group of people. Our story centers around a young actor named Abraham Atta, I believe is how you say his last name. He has not acted prior to this. He is going to win an Academy Award, I think.
Wow.
He's part of a young family. They're separated as a result of this civil war, and he witnesses his father and brother being killed. Those are the only people he's with. He runs into the jungle and is happened upon by this group of children soldiers, almost entirely adolescents. They are led by Idris Elba, who is going to be nominated for an Academy Award for
this.
Wow. He leads the group of children, he indoctrinates him, brings him in, and it is the story of them going through this fight. This is why this is a movie you don't need to see on the big screen, because it's tough to watch. It is, they're doing bad things to kids. Kids are doing bad, evil, awful things. It is an unsettling movie.
And this is based on what's happened in many African countries where you do have children who are abducted from villages and forced to become child soldiers.
Exactly. And that's we all have that narrative. This just takes any specific country out of it and says it's somewhere in Africa.
Okay.
And I like that it does that. It doesn't try and say, oh, Nigeria handled it. It doesn't do that. It removes that, which I really like.
Okay.
This is it's unsettling to see how gorgeous the country is, how well it is shot. He plays around with colors in it. And then to see what's happening on screen, it doesn't fit. Your mind's going to look at it, how am I watching this and thinking it's beautiful and then seeing what these kids are doing? And it does not fit. And it's unsettling intentionally. It's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
Wow, oh wow, is this well acted, though. Those two, Idris Elba and Abraham Atta, they are both going to get Academy Award nominations.
Well, now, let me ask you about this, because it is coming out on Netflix. It's streaming on television, and Netflix got some Emmy Awards this year for
yes.
House of Cards and other things that they had streaming on television. This movie is streaming on TV at the same time it's showing in movies. Does that make it eligible for Emmys as well as Oscars?
I don't know if Emmys, but the reason they are... Netflix really fought hard to get this in theaters because it has to be in a theater to be considered for an Oscar.
Right.
And so it is, but it's very, very limited. There's one theater in St. Louis showing this that if you want to go see, you can find. Otherwise, Netflix. But this is an excellent movie.
Right, what's the name of it again?
Beasts of No Nation. This is one of my favorite movies of the year.
0 to 10 scale?
8.5 out of 10. This okay. is, but the acting is just wow, oh, wow.
Okay. A couple of other things I want to mention here, because I talked about the Tom Hanks movie, Bridge of Spies. I found this on mentalfloss.com, one of my favorite websites.
Yes.
They made a list of movies that almost starred Tom Hanks. Movies where he was either originally thought of or was actually offered the job. And I won't go through all 16 of them, but I'll just give you some examples. Police Academy, which, of course, starred Steve Guttenberg. It says that the producer's wish list for Mahoney, the character Steve Guttenberg played, started with Michael Keaton, then Tom Hanks, then Judge Reinhold, then Steve Guttenberg.
Wow.
Oh.
When Harry Met Sally.
No.
Says director Rob Reiner talked to Tom Hanks about playing Harry, as well as Albert Brooks, Richard Dreyfuss, and Michael Keaton. But when Billy Crystal came in and read with Meg Ryan, they had immediate chemistry, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks was considered for Super Mario Brothers in 1993.
Oh, he dodged the bullet there.
He was hired to play Mario before he was fired and replaced by Bob Hoskins in a movie that was universally panned and Hoskins later called his biggest disappointment in life. How about this? Tom Hanks as the star of Groundhog Day.
Oh.
Director Harold Ramis admitted in a 2009 Q&A that he initially wanted Hanks to play Phil Connors. But Hanks told him, look, audiences will be sitting there waiting for me to become nice, but I always play nice. You need an SOB. Get somebody like Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And
that's
sure enough,
that worked.
That's right. How about Tom Hanks as Andy Dufresne in The Shawshank Redemption? He was offered it first, then Kevin Costner, then Tom Cruise, before it finally went to Tim Robbins for the role of a lifetime.
I could see Tom Hanks doing that, playing that role, but the other ones, no way.
Yeah. How about Speed, 1994?
Speed?
Screenwriter Graham Yost says that the studio went to Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise first, then went to Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson, and then somebody brought up Keanu Reeves' name when the first four had passed.
Woody Harrelson?
Yeah. Then there are others on here like Nixon and Star Trek First Contact and The Curse of the Jade Scorpion and Primary Colors. And they were going to do Martin Scorsese was going to do a Dean Martin biopic called Dino with Hanks playing Dean Martin. That never got made.
No.
But the one that's on here that makes me go, wow, was Cameron Crowe wrote Jerry Maguire with Tom Hanks in mind.
Oh, come on.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, what's amazing to me is when you look through that list, how many times are Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise up for the same role?
Mm-hmm. We need a brunette.
But the problem was that Tom Hanks was making his movie, That Thing You Do, which is one of my favorites of all time, about the one-hit wonder band, The Wonders, which he wrote, directed, co-starred in, and wrote the music for. It's really a terrific piece of movie making. And so Cameron Crowe said, all right, well, if I can't have Hanks, I'll take Cruise. And, you know, then you had me at hello.
You mentioned Super Mario Brothers in 1993. What was Tom Hanks up to in 1993? He was winning an Academy Award for Philadelphia. So Super Mario Brothers probably did not fit into that. And making Sleepless in Seattle. Those were his other two movies that year.
Wow.
So he dodged a big bullet.
And he
there.
Was fired yeah. from Super Mario Brothers. He was actually cast, hired, agreed to do the movie, went and did it. And then somebody, can you imagine ever, as a director, ever saying, Tom, you're all wrong for this role.
Well, yeah, and that and Steve Guttenberg was probably a bigger star at the time Police Academy came out than
because
Tom
of,
Hanks
because
was.
Because of Diner and Cocoon, was
yeah,
that out yet?
Was,
I don't know.
A lot of those 80s comedies, too. And
yeah, well, in 1984, what had Tom Hanks done? Had Splash even come out yet?
I don't know.
Maybe right around the same time.
Yeah, he hadn't done... Splash was 84.
Okay.
When was Bosom Buddies?
Well, that was like that was 81 or 82.
Yeah, that was...
That's a TV series, still, Bosom Buddies.
Well, I know. But that's the one that put Tom Hanks on the map, at least to begin with. But
Steve Guttenberg was primed to be it. And so, their career paths went in a little different direction. Yeah,
and by the way, if you think you can't see Tom Hanks in a Police Academy movie, remember that about the same time he made Splash, he also made Bachelor Party with Adrian Zemed.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
When did Big come out?
Probably a couple of years after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Splash was really his first big one.
Yeah.
I would say Big was probably 85, 86.
88. It was later.
Later?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But it was right there.
Well, there you go.
Just imagine Bob Hoskins, though, in Philadelphia.
No.
Exactly. Imagine they flipped roles there.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
And then the last movie thing I've got to mention here is they're planning on making a sixth Die Hard movie. Did you hear about this, Colin?
Kind of disgusted.
With what's his name?
With Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
The film will be called Die Hard Year One, a prequel to the action series set in 1979, showing how John McClane, the Bruce Willis character, became the rough-and-tumble cop that audiences know.
Oh, Lord.
The plan is for Bruce Willis to reprise his role of McClane and then have a different actor coming in to play the younger version of the character. Now, the first film came out in 1988, and since then, the Die Hard franchise has made $1.5 billion, not accounting for inflation, because a lot of that was 80s and 90s money. The last one, A Good Day to Die Hard, grossed $67 million in America, $304 million worldwide. But here's what they're trying to do. Reboot, origin story, go back, get another actor to be him, and try to go forward. It ain't going to work.
It shouldn't work.
Die Hard with a walker. Dun, dun, dun.
How about Die Hard? It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they want to go back and make him, as a prequel, the young John McClane.
That's stupid.
I don't see it happening.
I hope it doesn't.
Any other movie stuff?
I just had one other piece of... So CBS is refusing right now to air, apparently, advertisements for the movie Truth. Truth stars Robert Redford and Cate Blanchett about the story of Dan Rather falling from grace. It was the story that ended his career.
That was where he reported on whether George W. Bush had actually served
in the Texas Air National Guard. There's a movie coming out about this, starring Robert Redford as Dan Rather. CBS is now saying we will not air advertisements for this.
Well, I'm guessing the movie doesn't make CBS look all that good.
No, but at the same time, it seems it's not like it happened yesterday. It happened almost a decade ago.
There are still people there.
There are, but oh man, that's just silly.
But I think anybody can reserve the right to say, oh, you're making a movie that makes us look bad. We're not going to run spots for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, they're paying you.
What do you mean they're paying you? Of course they have to pay you for the advertisements.
I know. So you're turning away money? I don't get that. I don't understand that.
CBS will make it up on football. Don't worry about them.
I guess they will. That's
don't worry
point.
About them at all.
But this weekend, the other thing I wanted to say about box office, we've got The Martian holding over Goosebumps that we didn't talk about. That's the kids. If you read the stories growing up, it's all the stories essentially tossed into one movie with Jack Black in there. Bridge of Spies and Crimson Peak. It's going to be a very good weekend we could have four movies right around $20 million, and that puts us on pace. This is going to be the largest box office year ever.
Wow.
$11 billion domestically.
All right. Colin Jeffrey. He'll be back at the top of the hour with the news and the rest. That's our showbiz segment for this week.